Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I spoke with John T.K. Search in mid-June as he was getting set to move to Philadelphia to become WRTI's weekday morning classical host. He also sings opera and in concert with orchestras. Early in our conversation, I asked him how he decided to become a classical singer.
I kind of fell into it. I sang in the musicals when I was in middle school, and then my freshman year of high school. And then the choir teacher was like, you should really sing in the chorus. And so I did that. And then I started singing, getting more interested. And I found that the pieces that I liked singing the most were the ones that were classical pieces of music, either that or the spirituals. And we went on a trip to Pittsburgh Opera. My first opera was The Magic Flute. And at that point, I think I already knew the Zarastro arias. I was listening for the Zarastro to take the low E at the end of In Diesem Heiligen Palen, which is, of course, not written, but is often interpolated. And so I think I sort of fell into it that way. And I sort of grew to love it as I immersed myself in it more. So the second semester of that point was when I picked up radio, was when I started at the college radio station. And then after I had taken a break from school, I had realized, you know, and I didn't think at all about, you know, potentially doing radio as a career at that point. But then I thought, you know, what I do best and what I want to do is sing. And so I decided I'm just going to go for it in that perspective. Because when I started, I double majored in vocal performance and music education. Mm-hmm. And then I decided I'm just going to go for vocal performance so that I would enable myself to fail. I wouldn't have a fallback, and therefore I would concentrate more on what I was doing. And that worked out. I did much better at school at that point. I was also older and more mature than, you know, an 18-year-old fresh out of high school.
So you started when you were 18.
Yeah, you could say that. I took voice lessons my junior and senior year of high school. And then I sort of meandered my way through my first 2 years of college. And then I really got back into it when I was about 22 or 23. I think I was 22 at that point. As I continued with singing and with college radio, I thought, you know, I would love to do radio because I'm not going to be able to make a living singing. I should find something that I really like to do that I could do full time so I don't have to worry about supporting myself on singing. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, if I could do that in radio, that would just be perfect. And so the first thing I did when I moved to Baltimore is I emailed the program director at WBJC. I just said, hey, do you need a sub at any point? Here's some recordings from when I was at my college station. And he liked them. Obviously, they weren't. The programming was quite a bit further left out of left field than, and this was from the classical program that I did on U92, the college station. They were obviously much further out of left field than a classical radio station would program. But he just said at the time, you know, there was nothing really available at that point. Like everybody who worked here until I got here had been here for about 20 years.
Right. So I understand that when you started working in college radio, you directed a heavy metal program.
That's correct. I did.
So describe the range of your musical tastes.
Oh, man, that could take a while. I mean, definitely classical and metal are at the top of the list for me.
Are they at different ends of the spectrum, or do you see a lot of similarities?
Well, there are quite a few similarities between classical and metal. Like the guitar work of metal musicians is so precise and virtuosic. The simultaneous complexity and non-complexity of classical, of like, say, standard repertoire and metal music, because you have all the ornamentation on top. You know, if you look at all of the, you know, the intricacies that are in a Verdi opera aria, and then when you look back at it, if you just look at the big picture, this is an elaborate set of four chords, which is the same as it is with metal music. It's, you know, there's a lot of well-executed filigree on top. But if you really want to get down to it, there is a clear structure there.
Did you ever play heavy metal music?
I would say yes, but once. So my college station had a program called Morgantown Sound, and they would have live bands on. And one time they didn't have a band. So a friend and I just, you know, my friend played guitar and I played drums. And we just played like a 55 minute jam session that went through a whole bunch of different styles of music, a lot of which included blast beating and very fast fills that are also found in metal music, which blast beating, metal borrows that from jazz, blast beating is when you have a cymbal and a snare drum going in 16th notes in very rapid succession. So it goes kind of like.
So you play the drums as well?
Yes, I do.
Any other instruments?
I play a bit of piano. I would say I play advanced pop piano, and I can play some classical pieces as well. But I would say my ability is that of an advanced pop player. And I played the trumpet for 1 year when I was a kid.
Cool.
My maternal grandfather played the trumpet. And so that was the first non-piano instrument that I wanted to take up. But then the next year I took up the drums, and that became my non-piano instrument of choice.
So I wonder, speaking about you being drawn into singing, were you drawn into the singing because of the theatrical opera aspect of it? Or is it music? Is it drama? Is it theater? What do you love about it?
Those are all parts of it. I definitely love the drama of it. I love the acting element of singing opera. I love the music as well. I have a particular affinity for Verdi. I love new music as well, both the music and the idea of people creating, you know, new music. The last performance I did, literally the day before everything shut down, was the end of a run of performances of a new opera by Francis Pollock called Briscola.
Cool. Well, you mentioned your love of new music. So you had you hosted a podcast on new music. Can you talk about Pause and Listen and why, what motivated you to do that?
Pause and Listen was originally about new music that was available on the internet that my friends who I would bring on the show just would be willing to recommend. As the podcast went on, I wanted to steer the music we talked about in the podcast in a direction that would fit a sort of narrative that I thought would be helpful to sustain classical music past, into the future, you know, so that I would not have to watch classical music die in front of me.
Well, it's interesting because radio is really no longer just radio.
Right.
And just as classical music is not easily defined anymore.
Yep.
If it ever was. So What's the most exciting thing for you about working in radio?
I think it's sharing the music with the people that I'm talking to, and just being able to express how I feel, and then especially being able to hear back, because it's a communicative medium that, you know, people hear what I say about the music that I get to share with them, and then maybe they'll send me an email, and then we'll continue that conversation as it goes. It's the communal listening experience that radio uniquely provides, the music radio uniquely provides.
It's an exciting time now because I think people are discovering composers that haven't really been performed or heard.
Yes.
Even if you just take the music that we are continually discovering, there's just a lot to be listened to.
Yeah. Classical music is now starting to pay attention to music that either was left out of the canon for non-musical reasons, or is just new music that people are discovering that are being covered in more publications than just classical music publications. People are noticing in pop music and the indie sphere that more relations are being made to classical music, or people are hearing things being suggested as classical music. It's showing up in venues that are not traditional for classical music. I think this one section of classical music, and more, I think, is breaking away from the traditions that might have made classical music seem austere. And that breakdown of that tradition, in whatever context, you know, that applies to, that makes classical music more welcoming.
So how do we make classical music as welcoming as possible?
I think classical music is realizing quicker and quicker that, especially in America, it needs to start reaching out to younger audiences, to more diverse audiences. And that is with music that is newer and music that is more diverse, composed by many different types of people and performed by them as well. And there is more and more of a push to be able to hear all those different voices and recognize that, you know, this is not a restrictive kind of music, that this is a music that is for everyone, that it is, you know, going to WRITI's mission statement, this is a cultural resource. And to make classical music more welcoming, it needs to be clear that it is for everyone. And on the way to doing so, you can show that it is by everyone.
Right. That's great. So what do you enjoy doing off the stage and away from the broadcasting booth?
I enjoy riding my bike, though it's been really hot out, and it's either been really hot or raining. So my exercise has generally been anaerobic for the past couple of weeks, which is good for me because I've actually only started lifting, and I'm actually enjoying it now. Now that I've like found a way to do it, to like, I've always felt kind of self-conscious about doing that, but I've actually grown to enjoy it quite a bit.
You're talking about lifting weights?
Yes. I love board games. I love table sports like foosball and air hockey and pool. Table games that you would find at a bar, and outdoor activities, skiing, various adventurous, arguably dangerous outdoor activities.
Wow. So yeah. Interesting. Well, you were moving here with your wife and any pets?
Yes, I have a dog whose name is Moxie. She is a potcake, which is a kind of mixed breed that is found in the Caribbean. She's a rescue from Antigua that we got from a rescue in New Jersey. Potcakes get their names from their street dogs that are fed the scraps from pots that people would feed them in the street. And they're all like a similar kind of mixed breed. Potcakes look like a smaller lab with tan fur.
Do you have anything that you started doing during the pandemic, aside from making these funny, interesting music videos? Did anything else that you started doing that you want to continue now?
I started baking sourdough, and my sourdough starter lives. And I, you know, I've, as soon as I bring it up to my new apartment in Philly, I'm going to try to refresh the starter and bake more bread, or at least bake pretzels. I love pretzels, and I've, you know, being able to bake sourdough pretzels has just been great.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you came to the right city too, right?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Great talking to you. Thank you.